Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Carium, the telehealth platform enabling healthcare's digital transformation, helping you care for people within the fabric of their daily lives. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Andrew Lockhart, CEO and co-founder at Fathom Health. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Andrew, what I always like to do before getting into the main part of my conversation is give my guests a bit of a chance to provide more of an introduction in terms of who they are and what they do. So the floor is yours.
Awesome. So I'm the co-founder and CEO of Fathom. What Fathom is we're a company that's about 5 years old. And we're 100% focused on medical coding automation. And so what we do is we ingest the records that physicians and providers create over the course of care, and we output what's called medical codes, which power a lot of what goes on further downstream in the healthcare system.
So medical coding is a pretty specific area within the industry. Kind of what sparked your interest in the coding aspect?
So I'd say that we started Fathom in the worst possible way, which essentially was we found a really sweet hammer and we went looking for a nail. And that really sweet hammer, about 5 years ago, my co-founder, Chris, he had the insight that the intersection of deep learning, which is a lot of the technology that's, you know, powering deep fakes, self-driving cars, voice assistants, was getting really good at managing and interpreting words. And we were looking for an opportunity to do something within healthcare. And that was basically the prompt. We then spent a lot of time following essentially the path electronic health record. And funnily enough, we had assumed that medical coding was something that was already largely automated. And then at one point I spoke to an executive who, fast forward a couple of years, ended up becoming a client who were talking about things, and he was like, hey, like, what about medical coding? And I was like, isn't that largely automated? He's like, well, I employ 2,000 people who do it, so I hope not. And we started diving down this rabbit hole, and it just seemed to be something that was extraordinarily broken, but also, and if you imagine an optimal perfect state, something that would create a whole bunch of upside for the healthcare system.
So maybe to help just make sure everyone understands exactly what we're talking about, can you help explain what medical coding actually encompasses?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so medical coding has a very interesting history. It was first introduced post-World War II by an organization that was a predecessor to the World Health Organization with the goal of basically creating a standard way to account for mortalities and morbidities. It was, you know, an effort to basically a public health effort. Over time, it also became the mechanism through which reimbursement happened in the healthcare system. And really what happens is, you know, doctor or nurse sits down, types out, today largely types out, sometimes they do it through a transcription tool, but types out what happened with a patient. And then either they then go through the notes and figure out the associated codes with that visit, some describing the diagnoses and some describing procedures performed, or a third party does that. And that essentially is the medical coding process. Today, if you want to describe just technology and third party, so medical coders doing it, the cost of the healthcare system is probably, the US healthcare system is about $10 billion. If you want to also include the cost of physician times, those estimates can get well into the 20s.
Yeah, and kind of with that description of it, I think you just covered a lot of different ground. You know, you're talking about kind of reflecting a diagnosis or a particular procedure or service that was provided, along with helping to almost kind of synthesize the information in the note. So can you help maybe like tease apart some of the complexity that goes, that lies behind that of, you know, how do you go about figuring out what are the right codes and, you know, what are the different code sets even?
Yeah. So there's multiple code sets supporting the US healthcare system that in aggregate, you've got about 200,000 codes. covering the space, and they described in a lot of granularity every possible diagnosis, you know, from very common things like type 2 diabetes to ones that you wonder out how they exist. There's actually a code for water skis on fire, let alone things like floating in space, sucked into a jet engine, also codes. So they cover this huge space. And basically the complexity is often driven by, so length of notes. So oftentimes you take something like, let's say it's not just a matter, the diagnosis code is not just a matter of like, okay, well, what's, you know, the disease being treated? Severity can matter. Some specificity. So for example, if you're talking about a cut, it matters where the, or a broken bone, it matters where the broken bone is. Then it can matter whether it's left or right arm, that can be indicated differently. And then on top of it, you can say, take a laceration, how big the laceration will result in a different code. And then further to compound it, if there's multiple things combined, multiple diagnoses combined, that can result in a wholly different code. And so then you cascade all this variance across essentially different payer guidelines. So different insurance companies will demand getting, you know, different codes appearing and how that interacts. And then very long documents, and you've got this insanely difficult problem. And then you then layer further on top of it, constantly changing guidelines.
So kind of, as you were just saying, with the, you know, a different insurer potentially interpreting or requiring different backup for the code, for each different code, you know, how do you know what information to put into it, or how to pick the right code?
Yeah, so the insurers are typically very good about providing their guidance and how they do things. Now, the other thing that we do see a lot of clients do is they, you know, look at denials data, and sometimes some commercial payers are not going to like certain site diagnoses associated with certain procedure codes. Some of our clients will shy away from doing that. The nice thing, and this is actually an arena where CMS drives a lot of value, is most of everything is a derivative of what CMS decides to do. And so in that way, it does push towards standardization in a way that, if insurance was entirely private, I could imagine a world where it'd get really complex.
You know, I think that's a great point, because it's certainly one that I've heard before, which is, you know, when CMS adopts something, and when we're talking about CMS, it's, you know, I'm guessing you primarily mean for Medicare coverage. You know, once Medicare covers it, then you see the commercial world kind of falling in line behind it, because they, to some degree, allow CMS to fumble its way through, work out a bunch of the kinks, and then they can kind of ride the coattails.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, I think by and large, CMS just adds a ton of value to the ecosystem. And the one thing I would say is that when we first dove into starting Fathom, when we looked at a lot of the ecosystem, we did look at clinical applications, and what we found is the care settings create a lot of idiosyncrasies. But the administrative side, because CMS drives what's being done, it's a lot more standardized. And because it's more standardized, it's a lot easier to build something that scales. Now, what I would not have anticipated is the degree to which standardized rules really don't create a lot of standardization. So in a lot of cases, the guidance, say, from CMS could be a lot more specific. And a lot of times that results in clients wanting to layer an additional layer of specificity on top of it, based on what they're looking to do. Or eliminate ambiguity that's not covered by the guidelines. And so then what that does is create further fragmentation.
And is that where you're talking about kind of the higher degree of variance in the clinical care setting, where I think, as you were just kind of describing, it's almost kind of a CYA approach of they see maybe a high level description of what CMS might require, but then they want to fill in, I think, as you were just describing, a lot more detail just to make it hopefully crystal clear, or at least clearer in terms of why they picked what they did.
Yeah, exactly. I think the CMS guidance today largely leaves some pretty substantive gaps. And the clients that are layering guidance on top of that, so that in the face of an audit, they can stand up and say, we did X, Y, and Z, because this is how we approach this particular scenario that may be open to interpretation, I think they leave themselves far less exposed.
Yeah. And kind of that word that you just used of audit, mm-hmm. you know, do you see that driving a lot of different behaviors or driving certain types of behaviors in the clients that you're working with?
I mean, the most interesting thing, so you know, Fathom's about 5 years old. We really started getting deployed over the past couple years and have ramped up substantively. One of the interesting things that we've seen is on average, you know, Fathom is going to code at a higher acuity than the client's coders or physicians. And a lot of that is basically fear. You know, the human coder knows that if a claim gets denied or gets sucked into an audit, it's going to be punitive for them. Whereas the benefit of the AI is it's objectively looking at what's there in the documentation and ascertaining the code. And so they get a truer reflection of the work that's actually being performed. Now, that isn't the case for all clients. What Fathom does is it codes what's documented, and we have encountered clients that have been perhaps overcoding. But generally speaking, the trend we've seen is that given a large volume of coding, most providers are not getting reimbursed as much as they should because of these like areas of ambiguity.
Yeah, and I think also, as you just mentioned, you know, not necessarily just the ambiguity, but kind of that fear of the repercussions of having a retrospective audit or someone question what has been done, you know, I think, as you just said, can lead certain, you know, some groups to go at a level below maybe what could be justified with what they've actually documented. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of, I think, as you were saying, having systems that are just looking purely at the record and not trying to arguably not trying to introduce any of that, profit motive that could be ascribed to a human, taking the look at it and putting in a code, you know, if you take that element out, it can provide, you know, I think as you were suggesting, better support for why that higher level acuity is selected that then leads to higher reimbursement.
Yeah. And then interestingly, one of the other things that, you know, I didn't anticipate going into this is that the velocity of automation creates some further interesting opportunities where what can often happen is that the procedure that ends up getting performed is different than what was authorized. And historically, what a provider does in that scenario is even though they did more work and should get paid more, they downcode to what's been authorized because, you know, dealing with a denial is expensive and a low probability outcome. But if the coding happens in minutes rather than 2 to 5 days, you actually get the coding result back in a sufficient window where you still have that 48-hour window to rectify the authorization. And then you can actually send out a claim for basically full reimbursement for what was actually performed.
I think that's something that is not readily apparent from the when you're just talking about it. Cause as you just said, if you can speed up the entire process, mm-hmm. it actually allows you to kind of help account for the unexpected more quickly.
Yeah. And what really has me excited about Fathom is entirely that, you know, as you have this coding occurring in real time, I think very quickly you begin to create the infrastructure for real-time adjudication, which can create just a ton of visibility for not only patients, but providers and as well as payers, understanding where their liabilities are, what happens next, being able to predictively give the patient the ability to say, hey, like the physician, I'm going to make a referral to there's these two specialists I would consider. One, you know, I have all this data now, it's occurring in real time. I can tell you your copay is going to be $50. I like them a lot, but that's $50. Or there's another specialist I like. And then further, like maybe it's a 2-week more wait, but it'll only be a $10 copay. And I think that's the world we're moving to, and something that we can get to increasingly with technology like Fathom.
And I think a real-time adjudication prospect, you know, as you were just describing, would alleviate a lot of the friction points for everyone involved. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Andrew Lockhart from Fathom, and we're talking about medical coding and the benefits of automating that process. And you're kind of, Andrew, to dig a little bit more into that, you know, future of real-time adjudication that you could see coming, you know, what additional changes would be required to help facilitate getting there? You know, obviously we've been talking about automation on the care delivery side, but, you know, does it call for changes, you know, on the insurer side, or, you know, kind of what other components would you see as helping to achieve that reality?
I mean, a lot of trust needs to be built between the payer and providers. Because essentially, like, look, you've got 15 cents on every dollar in the US healthcare system being spent on administrative costs. You look at single payer countries, that looks anywhere between 3 to 7 cents. So you're talking about an enormous amount of waste. Theoretically, what should happen is basically, you know, the provider should auth access to their EHR to the payers they work with. And basically the payers can essentially suck in that data, code, and adjudicate in real time and process payments. And all of that will remove an enormous amount of cost, but what that relies upon is some level of trust between the payers and providers. Historically, I think that the payers have benefited from some positional power that, you know, has given them a lot of advantage, as well as some like clear data advantages, right? Like the provider only has their set of data, their experience. And so the data advantage is really sat with the payers. But I also think, and now I'm increasingly hearing it from the payers, that, you know, they care a lot about member experience. And a lot of the member experience is tied to, you know, a 90-day rev cycle. And they want, you know, to be able to have like some seamless Uber experience where, you know, book an appointment with your doctor, walk out, get a notification, oh, $10 copay, we charge your card, you're set, rather than something in the mail 60 days later that you then have to, you know, go to some archaic form to figure out. And so I think in that respect, payers are willing to give up some of that power because it's beginning to create some real downstream, you know, member benefits.
Yeah, no, kind of those market forces certainly would seem to be a powerful motivator to, you know, it seems like maybe not just the insurers, but also the care delivery of, you know, because it's, you know, you want to be able to retain your patients or retain the people that you're covering. And, you know, as you were just saying, if you're not creating an experience that is easy and kind of aligns with so much of what we're all getting used to in regular kind of real or regular life experience, you're going to start to seek out a different group that will allow that to happen.
Yeah. And just to give you a sense of like how I think that market force is going to play out is the first folks to implement the real-time revenue cycle are going to be your IDNs. So the people that are both payer and provider. So your Intermountains, et cetera. And what that's going to do is create, and they're aligned, right? Because they're the provider and payer. And then what that's going to do is create a really fantastic member experience that now, you know, the sort of pure play payers are going to have to catch up to. And the only way they're going to be able to do that is to strike contracts with the providers in their network that they're comfortable with. And so ultimately, I do think you get to this world where you have a much more consumer-friendly patient experience.
And to get to that kind of friendlier experience, it would also seem inherent that the data itself in the first place needs to be refined. You know, because I think going back to some of what you're talking about at the beginning, you know, the initial documentation or the, you know, the information that's contained in the record is very much going to drive, you know, the accuracy of what can be coded along with the trust that you were talking about. And so kind of maybe to get back to that point or to that side of it, you know, what do you see as, you know, needing improvement on the documentation front, and, you know, what can help enable improvement?
Yeah. So, I mean, documentation, I think by and large is the biggest, you know, physician pain point. And it's becoming a bigger pain point for providers who are in risk-based contracts. So if you're a fee-for-service primary physician, you know, historically what you've done is, you know, you drop your E&M level or procedure code and then, you know, one or two ICDs. But you move to the risk-based world, you really need to capture all the complexity of the patient in any given visit to ensure that you get full reimbursement. And so that puts more onus on documentation. And, you know, to give you an example, that's not how this documenting what's wrong with the patient isn't fully intuitive. Like, let's say that you're seeing someone who, you know, is an amputee, right? It's not necessarily intuitive to the doctor to document that the patient is still, you know, an amputee, because when they saw them last year, they were also. And so that creates this thing that could be missing, but really impacts reimbursement. And that's where the data becomes really exciting, because you can go back in the patient chart at some point that was documented. You can surface that to the physician to make sure that they document it so that ultimately they get full reimbursement. And the other thing is that a lot of primary care scenarios historically, you know, you had the physician coding, and that wasn't too cumbersome when you had to drop 2 ICD codes. But now if you have to drop 8 to 12 for full reimbursement, that becomes incredibly cumbersome to the physician. And one of the interesting trends we've seen over the last year is a lot of primary care practices come to us and say, hey, you know, we think the technology is here. We're going to totally issue having our physicians do coding at all and just put that all in your hands, because ultimately that's going to lead to better outcomes for us, and do the best we can to remove that administrative burden for the physician.
And that description really seems to be kind of the nutshell of what the automation is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So kind of as you're looking at that, you know, how do you see that automation, the automation process continuing to refine as you continue to gain more experience?
I mean, the way that the technology really works is we just keep expanding our technology, our specialty coverage. So, you know, we started with emergency department and radiology. And what that allowed the system to do is learn, by and large, just about every diagnosis code, because more or less everything ends up in imaging or the emergency department in some fashion. Then we've been able to move into lower volume specialties where the system really only needs to learn a small number of procedure codes or a narrower set of procedure codes to be effective. And so, you know, the growth in Fathom is largely driving up automation rates. So we now, you know, a year ago, our top end automation rate in the emergency department was about 60% of encounters. We now have some sites seeing as high as 95%. And then also getting into more complex coding, so inpatient surgery, all coming this year. And then broadening into a lot of your longer tail specialties that historically couldn't get supported by automation, but we're seeing enough data now that we can begin to support.
So it really sounds like the access to a sufficient amount of data is the biggest kind of challenge that you have in terms of ensuring that the system you're developing will actually be able to be as helpful as possible.
Yeah, I mean, some combination of data and world-class engineers. So if anyone's listening and they're excited, we're hiring.
Yeah, no, I think finding the best engineers is a problem that every tech company out there has. It's I know at my company, we're always making sure we have a good engineering team, because if you can't develop what you're thinking about, then you don't have anything to really work with.
Yeah, I mean, we were very fortunate, and despite, you know, medical coding being something that's somewhat arcane and esoteric, the amount of data we've accrued from clients and then the technology we're using, so that intersection of deep learning and natural language processing, really is an arena where the science, the computer science fundamentally keeps moving forward, the infrastructure keeps changing, and that's allowed us to be a pretty extraordinary talent magnet, I'd say unique in tech broadly, but very unique within RevCycle.
Yeah, I guess would it be kind of fair to say that, you know, all the complexity of the codes, but it's still built around, you know, feeding the right information or providing the right backup to get to a particular end result. So it's, you know, you can, you know, it kind of almost mimics, you know, hopefully I'm getting this right, but it kind of mimics how the software itself might be created, because you're creating these formulas to get to a particular end result. So with the coding, you're told, you already know what the end result is. You just have to get the right inputs to get there.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the thing that has put Fathom in a very enviable position is, you know, we now have over 500 million coded encounters to learn from across all our client base, which has given us, you know, extraordinary technical challenges, but also extraordinary capabilities. So, you know, our automation rates are typically twice what anyone else can do in market. And then our coverage, what we can show up and do for a given health system, is, you know, easily 3-4x.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very, you know, kind of impressive scope of work and body that you can work with. And, you know, Andrew, believe it or not, we're already almost out of time. So I kind of want to pose one last question to you. You know, what do you anticipate will be the biggest impact over the next year on kind of coding or the further, you know, kind of rollout of automation to help with coding and revenue cycle?
I mean, within coding and automation, I think the thing that excites me is that the technology is very new, but we're continuing to produce results for clients that I think is going to demonstrate to the market and the industry that, you know, whereas 2 years ago, a prospective client would be of the perspective of what is the liability of implementing medical coding and AI. And I think they're now beginning to turn to, you know, what is the liability of not? Because demonstrably across our client base, you know, they're seeing reduced costs, higher accuracy, better performance, better ability to manage and deal with audits. And so, you know, it went from sort of like, how will I get, you know, what is the risk here, to what is the risk of not?
And no, that shift in perspective sounds extremely important, and hopefully we'll keep driving things forward. But as I said, believe it or not, we are already out of time. Mm-hmm. I want to thank my guest, Andrew Lockhart, for a great conversation today.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.